Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right. Happy Monday, everyone. Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast with Yahoo Sports Canada. My name's Emmett Mann. Rate, review, subscribe on YouTube or on a podcast platform, whatever you got. Joining me today is Mark Schindler of SB Nation, Basketball News. You can find his podcasting talents on Indie Cornrolls and also a draft podcast called Tag the Roller. We're going to talk Eastern Conference because it is going to be so fun down the stretch. There are so many good teams. I remember years ago, I was like, okay, so the fourth seed is under 500. Cool. But it's exact opposite now. You have like three, four legit teams that are vying for a title, and they have a certain windows they can kind of roll with here to win that title. And they're going all in kind of. So Mark, thanks so much for joining me. How was your weekend?
It was good, dude. First of all, thanks a ton for having me on. I appreciate the intro. I'm good. Today started off really well. I was hopping into a podcast earlier, and I did not realize that I had accidentally dropped my headphones into my coffee. And I didn't realize until I picked my headphones up and splashed splashed coffee over myself. So it's been that kind of morning so far. But you know, we're making do. It's good. Basketball is back and flowing, and I'm loving it, man. So I'm psyched to talk some Eastern Conference.
Hell yeah. We're going to start with the Raptors because, I mean, Raptors over everything. And after that, we'll kind of work our way down from the top of the East all the way down to eighth. And if Mark wants to talk Hornets or Hawks after what we just saw the Hawks do to the Toronto Raptors a couple days ago, we can do that too. But let's start with the Toronto Raptors. And I want to get your thoughts on, I guess, first off of the past few games, because they haven't just lost, they've been blown out. And there was so much intrigue about this second half of the season. They call it second half, it's last 25 games. And it's kind of looking out, okay, so they're healthy. They're going to start rolling. And then obviously the OG Anunoby injury happens. Who knows how long he's going to be out for? Rumored 3 to 4 weeks, usually with a fractured finger. And it was obvious that something was wrong because I had actually tweeted about this a few days ago where I was like, you know, OG, before the All-Star break, he missed like legit, like six layups down the stretch. And it was like point blank, like you shouldn't miss these shots. And then sure enough, as we find out now, he has a fractured finger on his shooting hand. So that kind of explains it. But anyways, what were your thoughts on the past two games that we saw with the Raptors? Is it a reason for concern, or is it kind of just like, this is just ups and downs of the NBA and you just shouldn't lose like that at this point of the season, but hey, it happened.
Not to be annoyingly nuanced, but I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, I didn't watch the Hornets game. I watched the Hawks game yesterday or Saturday. My time's so mixed up, but
it's all good, man.
Like, to lose two games like that back to back, like that is very bad. That's a simple statement. It's losing by 60 combined points in two games, not good. I think especially watching against the Hawks, like you saw how much they missed OG on both ends. I think, you know, just in terms of like, I mean, they were playing Kem more, and not to be unfair to Kem, like he just wasn't awesome, but also, and I think something that we're going to get into later, you just can see some of the issues in playing this kind of scheme and style when you don't have everybody right. And I think, I mean, it's great when you have everybody together, you bank on having that, but with where the roster is now, and especially with how bad the bench has been, I think that was pretty apparent in the last 2 years, but again, should not be that bad. Like the offense really was just like, it came out really good. The offense looked so good in the first quarter yesterday. A lot of Fred Pascal pick and roll, which we've seen a little bit more of recently. I still want to see more of it. And they went away from it as the game went on, and consequentially the offense kind of died out. I mean, I don't want to say that they just shot themselves in the foot. Like, they didn't shoot well, so that definitely hurt themselves as well. But offensively, it just feels like they're fighting against themselves half the time because they're not putting themselves in a great position. And then, I mean, Trae Young was just nuts yesterday. I think that's part of it that you have to factor in. Like,
yeah,
even they started just running without screens. They were just having him create from a standstill, and he was still throwing the defense into rotation and absolutely killing it. But I mean, the defensive execution was really bad. They went the few possessions they did go to zone yesterday, I didn't feel particularly great about. I mean, again, you could see missing OG. I mean, there were moments where Gary was playing on Trey. There were moments where Fred's playing on Trey. It just didn't matter. He was getting wherever he wanted to yesterday, and it was killer.
Yeah, and I look at that Hornets game, and that to me was like, okay, that I could equate that to just a poor game, you know, not coming out focused. The Hornets, obviously, they playing well. Like, they've been up and down a little bit this season, but they're clearly got a focus that they want to start ramping it up as they head towards the playoffs and, you know, trying to get out of that play-in position. But with the Raptors, you know, poor start, it happens, whatever. But that Hawks game was really perplexing because they did start well, like you said. And over the course of the game, I mean, I found it kind of weird. Nick Nurse talked about this after the game, is how they were going to scheme against Trae Young. And you have, you know, Fred trailing, and then you're just trying to kind of close down the space with him. But to me, I mean, maybe this is just my opinion, but I don't think that you really want to let Trae Young get in the paint too much, because once that happens, like, you're kind of asking for it. And they decided, he talked about this, they decided that they didn't want him to shoot threes. But to me, I'm like, I mean, why not let him shoot threes? If he goes off for 40 or something like that, you know, just through 3-point shots, or maybe he has a good first half or whatever, like, okay. But they were letting him do exactly what he wanted to do. Sure, they felt like they were able to counter with some of the schemes that the Raptors were throwing at him. But in the end, Trae was very comfortable in what was being tasked of him against the Toronto Raptors. And part of that probably is that Fred VanVleet isn't right. I mean, he's saying he won't ever say what's going on with him, but it's clear that he's just not, mobility is not there. His 3-point shot was much better against the Hawks, but his side-to-side lateral movement, you can tell he's just not the same player. And then you got Pascal, who was still kind of sick, and OG is probably their best perimeter defender overall when it comes to guarding multiple different body types. Like, no one can really do it the way he can. That's why, you know, he's in the conversation for an all-defensive team. And I thought, yeah, I think the Raptors kind of shot themselves in the foot, essentially, that maybe the scheming for that matchup against the Hawks just wasn't right, because Clint Capella had no problem getting dunks off that pick and roll with Trae. And if that's what they want to do and you let them do it, then, I mean, why would you scheme for that? Why would you want that to happen?
It's so hard too, because especially when you want to play an aggressive scheme like that, like, you have to be really crisp on the back end. And that was not the case yesterday.
Yeah.
When they did throw any kind of hedges or traps at Trae. I mean, if you threw two of the ball, he was lobbing it over top of Capella. Or if you did pre-rotate over, but before Capella could get down the lane and catch a lob, then the ball's going into the corner. And it's just like, it's so hard to stop a playmaker like that. But then even then, when they did have everything together, it just wasn't there. And I think, not to conflate everything to energy, but yeah. I mean, they don't look energetic right now. And that's definitely one of the areas where it becomes a little bit concerning coming out of the break like this. One of my friends tweeted this out the other day. I think
he's a Raptors Twitter person, I'm sure. Who's the friend?
It was Matt Issa, who also writes with me over at Basketball News.
Matt, great writer.
Yeah. I think it was four of the top five players in the NBA in distance travel this year are all Raptors players. And it sounds non-consequential when you just put it out like that. But this was an issue for the Pacers last year, who had Nate Bjorkman as head coach, and they played pretty much the exact same defensive scheme and a lot of the same frenetic offense. And it really wore down on them throughout the year, contributed to a lot of injuries. And I'm just hopeful it won't be the same with the Raptors now, but considering they pretty typically play like a 7.5 man rotation, you're seeing how it's playing out a little bit. And so I think there's, I don't want to overblow the last two games, but it definitely is showing some of the cracks.
Yeah. And then on the offensive side, they did start well against the Hawks. Like we talked about, the Hornets game, they only scored 93 points. So there you go. But not having a lot of spot up shooters, a lot of catch and shoot shooters, a lot of movement shooters. They only have really two OG to a degree, but then you got Gary Trent and Fred VanVleet. Those are like your only two movement shooters. And we'll get to some of the other teams that actually have a lot of movement shooters and how successful they've been at that. But you can see how the dominoes fall once you lose one player. I wonder if a player like Yuta Watanabe, who's been kind of MIA for a long time now, I think he might get a role all of a sudden because they just need his three-point shooting and they need his perimeter defense, two things that OG was relied upon to do. They're kind of in a tough spot with where they go with their bench. Again, it's going to, you know, rely upon more of Pascal and Scotty playing a lot more minutes. And now they're going to find ways to get, you know, Fred VanVleet some rest and get him off ball as a shooter, because they need his off-ball shooting. If they don't have that, then they don't have too many guys that can really hit shots at as high of a clip as he can. Overall, with the Raptors and the season that we've seen from them, do you think that they have something with this like small big ball philosophy? I'm not even sure what to call it, because it's not big ball. I mean, in the middle of the floor, they're tall, but their center is 6'9". So whatever it is, do you think they have something with it? Do you think it's something that they can kind of roll with for a few years and that it could end up, you know, helping them win a title at some point?
I mean, I think so. It just depends what you add to it. I think, like, just based on everything we heard, I think it was Jake Fisher who reported, and others did too, Mark Stein, about the Raptors reaching out about Kristaps Porzingis. Obviously, nothing came out with that, but I think they do realize that they need to find somebody who can solidify at the five more, because with the way that they play, like, I love their defense, but I just wish it was reined in like 5-10% sometimes. And I think if you had somebody who could protect the rim at a higher degree, like Precious is a good rim protector, but I think if you could add somebody in who saying puts the fear of God in the driver's wrong way to look at it, but like Precious doesn't quite have that yet. Like, I think if his reputation grows, he'll have that more with time, but like
mentally he has it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
He truly, like, does believe it, but yeah.
Like having somebody like not just to like throw out names, but like Miles Turner, like somebody who actually can deter drives without even having to block a shot. Like, that matters. That makes a difference for your defense. And I do think they kind of miss somebody who can stabilize them on the back end at times. But like, part of what's so exciting about the group when they do have them all together is the variations they can play. Like, we started to see Scotty and Pascal play more and drop. And it looked really, really jerky at first, but it's come along and it's looked better. But again, when you don't have everyone together, you've seen some of the difficulties with that. And rotations aren't the same and it doesn't look as good. I mean, to me, I think it's just more about, you know, adding more skill to this, because it's not that there isn't skill, but I look at Pascal, obviously incredibly skilled guy. It took him a while to get there. Like, what's happening next with OG? I've been like, I know a lot of Raptors fans have been down on OG for a season, which I find a little fault with. Like, I think some of the expectations for him before the year were a little too high, just given where he was coming from. I mean, he's had good flashes, but it's going to depend. Okay, how does Scotty add to things? I've been really encouraged with Scotty and impressed with Scotty and what he's done this year. Like, I think it's more, instead of looking at it as like the answer, how do you supplement it? Like, can you bring in a point guard off the bench who's going to be able to change things? Because obviously it's not going to be Malachi. Like, at this point, it seems like that's pretty done. I do think part of that is on the Raptors for never having a real, like, coming out of San Diego State. Like, you knew, okay, this is one of the best pick and roll players in the country. That's what he thrives on. This offense is not a pick and roll based offense. They don't run a lot of that. They don't have bigs who are great at, you know, getting you separation. So that's been a struggle for him even then. Like, his shot hasn't been there, but how can you find a five who, maybe instead of having like a starting five who needs to play like 30-ish minutes a game, maybe you can bring somebody in like a step up from Kem, like somebody like Rashawn Holmes, who was probably like two steps up from Kem, but like who can, you know, bolster the back line, do some things offensively without being a negative, and you know, keep things flowing and give you another look. Cause I do think that's one of the issues that they have right now. They just don't have a lot of the looks to go to. But I do think there's definitely something there. Like, it's, I mean, they wouldn't be above 500 right now if they didn't have at least something there that's intriguing.
Yeah. The Kem Birch one is a tough one because he's had knee issues the entire season. And I still don't think he's moving the way that he was earlier on in the season, when actually OG Anunoby was, as Fred said, the number one option, because Pascal was out and OG was doing a terrific job. He was getting, you know, 20 points per game. And Kem, he was the person that he was the previous season. in that latter end in the Florida, in the Tampa season, where he was such a great rim protector, where he was running the floor really well. He has that push shot that has some accuracy to it. And, you know, he's a pretty smart player. He's a next action kind of big, where he's not going to hold the ball for too long. He knows where the ball's got to go and he makes it happen. And that's why, you know, a person like Thad Young is such a good fit for the Raptors, because he kind of fit their identity even before they even had the identity. They liked him for a few years, and I think he's going to be a person that maybe if they decide to bring back next season, he could be a serviceable member. But like you had said, they don't do a lot of pick and roll. And I think that's still one of the weaknesses. Part of that is probably because they don't have, you know, the big to do it, right? They don't have like a pick and pop big. When it comes to rolling, Precious Achiuwa is still kind of honing his skills there. Yes, he can, you know, you can dunk an alley-oop. That's great. But when it comes to like finishing in traffic, it's just not there yet. They have tried a little bit of Scotty Barnes as a roller, and it's been really intriguing. But still, like, you just need him in so many different parts of your offense, because, I mean, he's Scotty. Like, this is the reason why he's one of the generational talents. Him and Evan Mobley, they're kind of battling it out for Rookie of the Year. Whoever gets it, obviously very deserving. Whoever doesn't mean you're bad. That's for sure. That means that you are just, you're 1A this season, but who knows what that means going forward. At the center position, you know, like you had said, they were in the talks for Kristaps Porzingis, which is cool. I mean, I wasn't sure how much value was to those rumors. I think, you know, the Mavericks for sure, they obviously wanted to trade him, and that's why he's in Washington. But Jakob Poeltl was one person that I really thought would help their offense. I mean, he had a couple of days ago, he had like 28 and 11. I was like, oh gosh, that would have been nice with the Raptors. He was like, he is, when it comes to screen assists and rolling as a big, he's such a great finisher. We even saw that in his first few years with the Raptors. And then Miles Turner. I mean, we don't need to go down his resume. There's a reason why the Raptors were so keen on getting him. He kind of fits their system so well. And with their system, you need, you know, you're looking for like a lengthy mobile big, and they don't exist everywhere. They're kind of tough to find, actually. And Precious, I'm very high on him. I think he's going to be a great NBA player. I think even next season, even this season, he had 21-9 against the Hawks yesterday. And like I said, I wasn't sure if he really had, if they should give him these kind of reps at this moment of the season. If you're trying to win games, like if you're trying to develop, then cool, you know, let him develop, do his thing. But I thought maybe, you know, send him down to the G League, make him the number one option. Let's let him like truly develop his skills and to make mistakes. But to his credit, like his 3-point shots come along a lot, and he made two against the Hawks the other day. And going forward, I mean, we'll see what he is, but in the end, he's still 6'9", and you just need someone taller. You just need someone taller. That's like, you scheme all you want. And you talked about this actually earlier, is that they had to hone down that aggressiveness. And I think the Hawks, against the Hawks, actually, they had to do it a little bit more too. They have throughout the season, like earlier on, it was kind of weird how aggressive they were, because they were just leaving these huge gaps in the middle of the floor and teams were just executing on it. And they were getting layups and dunks. I'm like, well, yeah, you gotta, it's not it. But now, I don't know, maybe they deviated a little bit back to those woeful ways against the Hawks, and they got burned for it. Trae Young made them pay quite a bit.
Yeah, yes. That's almost an undersell. What do you have, like 41-10 or something like that? It was ridiculous.
It was really good. 41-11, 17 of 24. And he only shot 4 threes, which is one of the signs where I'm like, he was just getting whatever he wanted in the paint.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Man, he's incredible. Like, he's cocky, but that's what I love about him. New York Knicks learned that last season. And he's one of those teams. It's one of those, part of one of those teams that's looking to get out of the play-in tournament, because I don't think the Washington Wizards are going to be making any noise. And the Hawks are in 10th right now. You got the Hornets in 9th. So the play-in is what a lot of teams are trying to avoid, because it's going to be very, very messy. And for the Raptors, I mean, they got to see what they can do here, because they're going, they got a tough stretch coming up here against a lot of really quality teams. They're on the road for like, you know, 6 games. They're facing, you know, the Clippers and the Nuggets and all those Goliaths in the Western Conference. It's going to be a tricky one. They got some things to figure out, and I'm not sure what the answers are. I mentioned Yuta Watanabe, that maybe he can come on, and over his past few games, when he has gotten playing time, he has hit his threes. And that's the reason why, talked about this on the podcast, that's the reason why he kind of fell out of the rotation, is that they had enough guys who did what he did and he wasn't producing offensively. But now, if he is able to hit his corner threes, if he's able to hit some catch and shoot threes, run the floor, play defense on the perimeter, maybe he has a spot in the rotation again. We'll have to see how that goes. But some decisions to make for the Raptors, and hopefully they can just stay healthy, get healthy. Hopefully Fred can get a new kneecap, whatever the hell the issue is, because it's not looking good right now. He's moving very gingerly, I must say. Any other thoughts on the Raptors for you, Mark?
No, I mean, I'm there with you. I think like their bench is limited, but there are guys who have utility. Like okay, what is holding you back from playing Justin Champagne 8 to 10 minutes a game? What is holding you back from playing Yuta? Like, I just don't think that Fred and Pascal need to play 38 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. And if that's where you're at right now, like, I think that does bring up questions about, okay, well then what are we doing here? Like, not that totally, but like, I mean, there are guys who can handle that, but I think we've gotten to the point where, like, you know, it's not very healthy for guys to play that large of a load every year. But I think I'm in lockstep with you. They need to expand the bench, see what's going on there, and see if you can maybe inject some energy that way. Because I mean, like, just talking, like, Justin has been, like, for noting, like, okay, this is a two-way rookie coming in. Like, he's looked really good when he plays and adds an element that they need, especially on the glass. So
sure.
It's hard for me to be against expanding the bench out a little bit.
Yeah. And then you just kind of form a unit that is just pedal to the metal. That's your job. And that's what I love about Delano Banton, is that he's constantly pushing the ball. And I think he's a person that has, you know, deserves to get some steady minutes, you know, game by game. Mm-hmm. Malachi Flynn, now that you got Thad Young, who's such a good screener and roller as well, maybe there's something that you can kind of build there as well. They didn't really have that guy, but Thad, I mean, he's old for sure, but he still has some skill to him, and he can probably help the Raptors in the pick and roll situations if they wanted to roll with that. And again, it's just like kind of getting some steady minutes from your bench players, so that way Pascal and Fred don't have to play as much. I'm okay with, you know, playing your starters a lot of minutes. I think it's kind of, it's fine, but as long as, you know, they're ready for it. And Alex McKechnie, he's well renowned as one of the better medical staff members, or whatever you want to call it, in the NBA. He prepares all the players for each game pretty well. But like you said, it's going to catch up to you at some point. And it's weird to say that's happening right now after, like, they had 10 days off, but we'll have to see. They got two games coming up here against the Brooklyn Nets, who we're going to talk about in a second. And then, like I said, they got a stretch where it's like Cavaliers, Suns, Nuggets, Clippers, 76ers, Bulls, Cavs. Oh, God, ew, Jesus.
That's going to be a gauntlet.
Yeah. So you got to figure that one out. Let's move on to the rest of the Eastern Conference. And we'll start from the top with the Miami Heat. Overall, with some of these teams, let's look at some of the strengths and weaknesses and kind of answer some of the questions that are sort of looming for them. So I guess overall, your first thoughts on the Miami Heat and where they are this season?
So this helps because I just did like a breakdown of the Eastern Conference last week
nice.
At work. And I'm hesitant to pick somebody who I think will come out of the conference right now. But if I had to pick somebody, it would be Miami. I think that they're who I have the least questions about. I still have questions about them, but as Milwaukee's kind of faltered, some of the teams that I thought would be doing better haven't been doing better. I mean, Miami's just been pretty rock solid. Like, Bam Adebayo, I'm hesitant to say that he's taken a leap, but just in February, 23-11 on a really, really darn good efficiency from the floor. He's getting to the line more. The defense has still been incredible. And that's where it starts and ends with me for Miami. I mean, their defense is ridiculous. First of all, those two games over the span of a week against Toronto were like basketball bliss. Those were so fun to watch. Man.
Yeah.
I came into the year very unsure about Miami as a contender because I had real questions about who's coming into play for them after like the sixth man. And they've answered that by just like growing movement shooters out of nowhere. Like Max Strus, 40% shooter on a real difficult variety of shots. He's okay defensively, moves the ball. Gabe Vincent has come in and been like a competent secondary playmaker for them, hitting shots off pull-ups. Like, it's been good. Caleb Martin has been awesome. Just very good for them. And he's back from injury now. I don't want to say they've benefited from injuries. Like, both Jimmy and Bam have missed a lot of time this year, but they're back and they're healthy now. And just having everyone together, I have questions about their half court offense at the highest levels for sure. But I think they're just kind of in the, well, we have this unit and we're going to rely on Jimmy, Kyle, and Bam making things work offensively. But right now, like, that defense is so hard to compete against. They're one of the only teams that I can actually like they'll run an all bench unit at least once or twice a game. And it's a plus right now, which is kind of nuts because they're just not like it's, I mean, it's kind of like going back to the Dwayne Casey Raptors teams. Like,
yeah,
those, bench lineups were able to carry them for stretches. And I have a lot of good things to say about this Miami team. They're really darn good. A lot better than I thought they'd be, honestly.
Sure. You know, when Kyle went there, I thought there would be a bit of a shift with their, I guess, with their play-by-play offense, only in the sense that Kyle is such a heady player. So you can really just kind of be a little more random with your offense now, because you make a lot of decisions on the fly. And that's one of his biggest strengths, is that, you know, he doesn't need a set offense. He can kind of just like look at the situation and be like, all right, we're going to run this Spain pick and roll. We're going to run this Chicago action. Jimmy, you know, post up on the block and let's get a bucket. Like, he can make those decisions on the fly. And having a player like that, who's like truly a floor general, I mean, Toronto fans, we all know, right? Like, he's exceptional at it. He has the biggest impact in the game, and you'll look at his stat line is like 6-6-6, right? But that's kind of how he is. And actually, you know, Jimmy talked about this a few days ago, is that it's like, when you have players like myself and Kyle and Bam, like three really heady basketball players who are unselfish and just want to win games, like, you kind of just figure it out as you go. And I think there's a degree to that, because you look at all those three guys and only one of them actually hits threes. And that's a weakness where I'm just like, is this going to be a problem for them at some point, you know, down the stretch of games, when in the playoffs, when it gets like really physical and the defenses are so locked in, are we going to encounter situations where, you know, Bam has to hit a shot from 15 feet away and it's not going to go in, or he's going to be in a really uncomfortable position, or Jimmy, like, he's not shooting three still. Sometimes he does, other times he doesn't, but he's shooting like what, 25, 29% from three. The principles of trying to win in the NBA nowadays still exist, right? Where you have to have a decent amount of three-point shooting, and you got to have, you know, great rim protection. And Bam obviously has that covered. Like you said, you know, he's having a terrific year. And when you have smaller players like, like Caleb Martin, a Tyler Hero, a Duncan Robinson, guys that probably aren't the best one-on-one defenders, but when you got Bam, who's so mobile and so strong, and he's just so active down there, like, he can probably make up for a lot of those deficiencies. But offensively, like you said, half-court offense, I'm not too sure. That's what kind of makes me go to this question about Victor Oladipo, who's supposed to come back in the next week or two. How important is he, do you think, to their championship aspirations?
I think the way things have gone, I could see this team making it to the finals right now. I don't know if I would pick them over any team in the West, but yeah. I think they have the capability to get there. But I think Victor would make, depending on what Victor looks like, I should say, would paint my vision in a more positive light. I think if you can add in someone like him, who theoretically adds like three-level shot making, less about the rim, just dependent on again, what he looks like. But a lot will depend on role too. Like, there was a stage where, like, when he was playing in Indiana earlier last year, Victor was good. Like, he was playing, that was the best basketball he's played since the first 20 games of 2018-19. The last time he's really looked right. And even then, he didn't look fully right. Like, he definitely had some knee stuff going on as that season started. But in Indiana, he was good at operating a little bit more off the ball, playing alongside Malcolm Brogdon, operating with Domantas Sabonis. And that's part of what I'm excited for with him. Like, he hasn't really gotten his burst all the way back, and that's expected. I mean, after the injury he had, and it's been more about his lift at the rim too. He hasn't had either, but playing alongside somebody like Bam, who's a dynamic screener, can run DHOs with, I think that's really enticing to me. But it's going to be a lot more about, can he buy into being more of an off-ball player who's just attacking off the second side or catching drives and, operating with that, because last year he was pretty good in Houston without, as long as he was not shooting pull-ups. Like, his pull-up was dead. That was a big part of what made him such an effective player in 2017-18. Like, he was gunning from like 28 feet. He was just pulling up, rising over screens, and shooting well on pull-ups. He's always been solid as a pull-up two shooter, not like amazing, but that's not something that I think Miami has time to really work into their offense and say, oh, okay, you're somebody who's going to just shoot from pull-ups now. Like, I think that's obviously going to be part of it, but it's all going to be, how does that factor in? And defensively, he adds just another element too, because last year, I mean, it hurt because Houston fell off defensively his last like week or two there before he got traded. But I mean, he was back to playing close to all defense level, in my opinion. Like, his off ball rotations are awesome. He's never been like a massive stopper at the point of attack. That's not what made him all defense in 17-18. Like, he's just really good and has awesome instincts. Like, I mean, similar to Kyle, he's amazing rotating as a low man and taking charges, as frustrating as it can be to watch sometimes. Like, he's really good at it. That just adds another element. And again, it's all about, you know, finding a theoretical fit with it. But if he can come in and be the like just a high level role player instead of trying to be a star, I think that would elevate Miami to an even higher level than they're at right now.
It's kind of sad seeing some players not able to do things that they used to be able to do. You mentioned his pull-up game. Like, that was one of the best parts of his game, is that how would he be able to stop on a dime, pull up, and hit a mid-range shot. It was so cool. It was such a dynamic way and very hard to stop. Not able to do that now, and maybe he gets back to that point in his career at some point. But, you know, looking at players that, you know, return after a long layoff, and I wonder if there's a part of this where what happened with Klay Thompson, that he came back and he was guns blazing, ready to go. Obviously, you know, the shot, you know, took some time to get back, but it seemed to me like he could have come back earlier, but because of how good the Warriors are playing, that they're just like, just chill, right? We'll get there. Like, take your time here. And I wonder if part of that was also what's going on with Victor Oladipo, that they're not in a rush. Like, they're top of the East here, and you just want to make sure he has, like, you know, 20, 15 games, something like that, where he's able to acclimate himself to the offense and get into some live game situations. But then after that, yeah, it's role acceptance. And this is where what Jimmy said is so important, is that you're not going to see, you know, Bam and Kyle and Jimmy clamoring for the ball if Victor is cooking for some reason. If they find something that's really working against a team in a playoff matchup and Victor has it going, they're like, just keep doing it. Keep doing it. Don't stop, because we're just trying to win games here. And that is why, you know, Miami is such an interesting team. And then, you know, their bench, like you said, we weren't really sure what they were going to be, how good they were going to be. But then they got all these movement shooters. And I talked about Toronto not having them, and this was a team that came to mind, that they have so many. And you don't really have to have a lot of variance to your offense. You can just keep on running the same kind of style, because you have so many players that can, you know, catch or shoot off the catch, and to come off screens and to hit shots. And PJ Tucker, we haven't really talked about him too much yet, but you have someone like him. Yeah, he's older, obviously, but you know what you're going to get from him. And he plays a hard-nosed brand of basketball. And I think at some point, you know, he's going to be the reason why player X isn't going to have a great series, because of how well he defends him.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because my friend Nikias Duncan wrote a really great article at the beginning of the year about how, you know, PJ Tucker is doing the most with the ball in his hands that he ever has. And I mean, Spo's really empowered him to do more with that. They've run some, like, they'll run some post splits with him. They do more with the ball in his hands. And part of what's really enticing about that to me is, and not that I think it's going to be something that swings a playoff series, but so often we'll see teams, like even just last year, like the Bucks won in spite of this, but there were stretches where, like, as good as PJ was defensively, like, he was an on-court minus for them at times, because of how often defenses could just leave him. Like, if he was not in the corner, or even if he was in the corner, they didn't care. Like, they were like, okay, cool, we're going to go pack the paint. And if you're able to, and like they've shown, like, if he's able to just make one or two quick decisions, put the ball on the deck for a second and then move it, which he'd never really been asked to do before in the NBA, at least not since he was in Phoenix, that adds just another wrinkle that makes it harder to stop in the playoffs. And I think, to me, it's like, it's a little bit less about Jimmy and Bam from three. Like, it's more, how is the pull-up game look from two? Cause even then, like, that's been an issue for Jimmy this year too. Like, outside of 14 feet, he's like, he's got nothing going from deep. Considering deep, like, up to the line. The free throw line. So that's just, it's going to be interesting to see. But, like, even then, like, going back to the run that they had, like, Jimmy shot, like, what, like 35, 36% from three in that playoffs on, like, three or four a game. Like, I don't know. I don't want to just, like, put money in the bank and be like, oh, he's a playoff competitor, but he does have that aspect to him. I'm almost more like, what does Bam look like in the playoffs? Not that he's bad. Like, Bam's a very good player, but can he continue to carry this aggression over? Because they need it. Like, there were stretches in that playoff run where I thought they could have used more from him. Even going back to last year, I think it's been a thing time and time again where it's like, okay, are you going to transition to this player, or is this just going to be a thing that happens from time to time? And this last month has been really encouraging with where he could be going as a player, but a lot of it's just going to be, you know, how does it translate in the playoffs? As much as I hate deducing it down to that, like, it's definitely, you know, I mean, for where this team is trying to go, it definitely comes down to that to a degree.
It does. He's shooting 35% from 10 to 19 feet on three shots per game. So it's not even like part of his game at the moment. One of the great things about Kyle is that he's so good at, you know, giving the ball to players in the position that they're very comfortable. And it's one of the things that made Serge Ibaka so good in that pick and roll that they had, the duo that they had, is that Serge loved that shot from the elbow. And he loved that shot from that mid-range spot around the free throw line. And Kyle just kept on feeding him and feeding him and feeding him. And so maybe it doesn't matter, right? Like the game of wits in a playoff series is so fun to see kind of roll out and to see how it breaks down. And, you know, the Miami Heat, they got some of the best chess players in the NBA with Spo and Kyle and even Jimmy too. Like there's a headiness to their game that you can't really measure in any way. And their ability to just kind of figure out ways to win games, it's probably one of the things that they have over most teams in the Eastern Conference, is that, you know, whether it's like an 80-point game, 120-point game, they just find ways to win. How do they do it? Who knows, but they just find a way. And yeah. Tyler Hero seems to have found his groove. I mean, he was wearing like this like highlighter pink shirt yesterday or a couple of days ago. He had these sunglasses on. So, okay, his swag is back. That's great. I want to see Victor Oladipo and to see how he finds his role within Miami, because if he accepts it and they find something that really works for him and the team, that they got something really cooking, that's going to be hella, hella fun to watch. Also very fun to watch is the Chicago Bulls, more specifically DeMar DeRozan, because his streak ended the other day, but he had an 8-game streak where he was getting 35 points per game, which is insane. You know, he was doing things that Wilt Chamberlain is the only person that's done. So very, very fun team. But then on the other side of the coin, yeah, they've had a lot of injuries, but they're 2-12 versus teams with 600 plus winning percentages or better. So where are you with the Chicago Bulls?
I don't want to say they're in a similar spot, the same spot as the Raptors. They're in a similar spot though, with having guys out. And I don't want to belittle it everything to that, but, it's hard for me to be super, critical of their defense with, I mean, like, as we saw earlier in the year, they were a top 10 defense with Caruso and Ball. And obviously their offense has taken on a whole other stage with them out, as they've needed to adjust. Sure. But, that's something I'm interested to see, is how that plays out when they do come back, because they are both slated to come back, and Patrick Williams is reportedly going to come back sometime too. But like I definitely have questions about them in the playoffs. I think a lot of it comes down to, as much as I think he's been really good lately, Nikola Vucevic. Mm-hmm. It's less about me. To me, it's less questions about the defense. Like, I think Vuce has been fine defensively this year. He does the system. He does what he's supposed to. It's been more about, like I mentioned, Caruso and Ball. Offensively, can he not just not only take advantage of the pockets that he gets because of DeMar and Zach drawing through the ball? Can he really just like exploit that? He's been able to, like, you know, on the slow rolls and pops from like 10 to 15 feet in the mid range, but he's got to hit his threes. Like, it sounds so trivial, but like that just hasn't been there for him this year after having, you know, like two or three really great shooting years from deep. I'm hopeful that will come back for him. Like, it's been better. Like, you know, in 2022, it's been better, but the last month or so, not as much.
Yeah.
And I think they really need that from him just to help unclog their offense in some ways. But, and what he does connectively for them is so huge. Like, I'm planning on writing something about it sometime soon, because I do think he's gotten a little bit too much hate this year. Like, that offense functions and flows because of how much he touches the ball and the way that he's able to maneuver things, similar to, like, you know, what Domantas Sabonis does, or obviously not to the same level of Nikola Jokic, but like, you know, in that same vein. But I mean, in a lot of the ways where I have had questions about them, they've answered them. Like, Kobe White has been huge this year. He's taken a step defensively. Yeah. Offense has been fantastic. He's looked better in a supporting role and still capable of doing on-ball stuff. I mean, Ayo Osumu has been one of my favorite players to watch this year. And he just feels like a guy who, as a rookie, is going to have it in the playoffs, which it sounds reductive, but like, I don't know, even like watching, I'm trying to think of like past Raptors who were rookies in the playoffs, but like,
Norman Powell. Like,
yeah, exactly. Oh, God. Yeah. Pacer killer Norman Powell.
There you go.
Like, I just see it with him in the playoffs, but I like that in Tristan Thompson. I don't think he's perfect, but I do think he's an upgrade over Tony Bradley. Like, I don't think that this team necessarily has I wouldn't bet on them to win the title, but I do think they have more of a playoff chance than I think people give them credit for. Part of it will probably depend on matchups and again, just health. Like, if they don't have one of Caruso or Ball, then I'm not there with them as a real contender. But I think if they are healthy, then I do see it with them for sure.
You talk about like simple philosophies, having the best player on the court does matter. And so if DeMar keeps on playing this way, and then you have Zach LaVine, who's actually as capable of being like that guy as well, but he's taken a step back as DeMar's on this heater. That matters in a playoff series, you know, game by game. And with DeRozan, there's just few places on the court that he's not comfortable. And he's kind of, you know, navigated his way through the NBA. And he's talked openly about, you know, how beneficial his time with the Spurs was. You look at his numbers and it would look like that his career took a step backwards, but learning how to be a better playmaker, understanding reads and working with Greg Popovich, you know, day by day and kind of, you know, picking his brain, a person who's, you know, won championships, and somehow, some way, the Spurs are still finding ways to make things really tough on teams. It just, it's the funniest thing that he's a great coach, right? And so there's a lot of knowledge to kind of use there. And I've enjoyed watching him be so confident in crunch time. And, you know, we talk about playoff games, you know, how they end up going. It's usually some sort of isolation situation. And it's kind of like, you know, is my best player better than your best player? Is he going to be able to get to the spot that he wants to get to versus yours? And DeMar has been very good at that. And he's talked openly about, you know, how comfortable he is in those situations now. And that wasn't always the case, especially in Toronto, but he's talked about his work ethic. And I mean, just look at what he's done. He's one of the best clutch players in the NBA. And so you feel very secure with the ball in his hands that something good's going to come from it. And that matters with Vooch. Yeah. Like he's, I mean, a lot of players probably just get, you know, a bad rap for a few bad games because they're not doing the same numbers that they were doing with the previous team or the previous season, but roles change constantly. And with Vooch, you know, you look at it, like he's getting double doubles game by game. He's still doing a great job of protecting the rim and in the ways that he can. It really does come down to, like you talked about, you know, them getting healthy, because we haven't seen this team healthy in so long. It's been forever, like really missing Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso. That perimeter defense is so important, and they're just not getting it at the same degree from the players that they got right now. So
I almost want to say I'm less worried about their defense and I'm more worried about the trouble their defense can get them into. That makes sense. Like, I guess you can't really segment it down like that, but even just in that Memphis game, I mean, they gave up, yeah, I think what, like 3 or 4 offensive rebounds in the last 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that they were playing terrible defense. It was just, okay, well, DeMar did kind of play bad defense, if we're being honest. But, like, I mean, his defense has been better this year. But still, like a lot of the moments where they have troubles because Vooch is out higher, playing closer to the level, they have smaller guys on the back line. That's part of where you hope Patrick Williams could come in and help this year. But
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloane Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
I just think that's going to be a weakness for them, given how they play, unless they really lock into, you know, making sure that guys aren't leaking baseline and coming in to get offensive boards or coming on a 45 cut. Because that's been an issue for them. Like, that's a big reason for why their rebounding's been a struggle. And that, I like just giving more possessions for your defense to fall apart, especially once, okay, they get the ball in the middle of the floor. That's A, an easy putback, or B, they're able to create a rotation right away. So it hasn't been that the defense has been terrible. It's just like, okay, if you keep giving people opportunities to beat your ass, it's going to happen eventually. So that's how it feels watching them, especially in that Memphis game.
It'd be great for them to have Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso, but it doesn't really address the other issues that they are a little bit small in the middle of the court. You know, DeMar and Zach LaVine are great, but then outside of that, like, they run a lot of smaller players out there, and that could end up biting you in the in the playoffs for sure. Let's move on to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who have no issues with the size. zero issues with size. They have all kinds of size. Hasn't been an issue all season. Raptors are going small, big ball. They're like, no, we're going to go completely big ball. They got a whole new culture. JB Bickerstaff has done a terrific job with that team, just kind of getting them to, it's a culture change. That's what it is. They're really thriving, and they love playing together, and they're competing, and all the injuries they have right now. I mean, geez, they lost Darius Garland, and probably many thought that things were going to kind of go sideways a little bit for them, they lost Colin Sexton. I mean, not Darius Garland. But then after that, you know, they've continued to just find ways to win games. Evan Mobley, talked about him earlier. And at the moment, they got Caris LeVert's out, Rajon Rondo's out, and Darius Garland is having some back issues. So we'll see when he returns, but he's probably the person who's going to return the soonest of the three. But we saw in that the previous game that they just had, they keep on finding ways to win games. I don't know how they do it. They got smalls playing large. They got bigs playing point guards. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the Cleveland Cavaliers? Very fun team.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I mean, I cover the Cavs too, and I don't even have a lot to say about them other than I just need to see what happens in the playoffs to a degree, because I don't know how to quantify this team. Like you mentioned, I mean, Darius isn't the one who went down, but like he is, I mean, he's been out. He's only played 3 games in February. And a lot of that, I mean, he's dealing with, I think it's like a lower back spasms, back injury. I can't remember, but they've still found ways to win. Like they're playing slightly above 500 still in February. They've, like you mentioned, I mean, they've just kind of dealt with everything. Ricky Rubio going down, Colin going down at the beginning of the year. They've kept playing well. They keep making it work. They are like my favorite team to watch in the league this year. Their vibes are just awesome. And I don't know. I think a lot of times, like other friends of mine that are analysts, they'll bring up like, oh, well, you know, how are they going to adapt to teams in the playoffs? And I kind of like run counter to that too. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. But as we've seen throughout the year, how do other teams adapt to them? Like, it is really hard to play against. Like, I think some people will conflate it to just, oh, they have size and that's how they make it work. They just play 3 big guys and bully people. Like, quite the contrary. Like, yeah, they can bully people at times, but a lot of it's just really intuitive, quick play. Like their offense isn't great, but I think it's almost better than the numbers indicate at times. Not when, sure, when Darius is off the floor missing, like their offense falls apart. But like once the ball gets moving, they're good at keeping it going. And like the big-to-big passing that they have, like we've seen it give Toronto problems. We've seen it give like every team problems, just because you're not used to seeing or having 3 guys 6'11 or taller who are capable of moving the ball between each other. Like it sounds rudimentary, but that's just not a basic thing. Like having 3 guys who are all really skilled playing their positions with that size makes it really hard. They can like, they have the ability to kind of bend the court to their dimensions, however they want to play. And I'm interested to see what that looks like in the playoffs. Like I would not pick them to be a real contender, but I do think if things go right for them and they are relatively healthy, like especially like, I don't think Darius can miss time for them at all, but they're not a team I would want to face in the playoffs, because I do think they're going to end up with home court advantage, it feels like. Or it's trending in that way. It depends on Darius's health and how things go with the other teams. But they have an outside shot at making it to the second round, in my opinion.
Hmm. Talking about like stars in their role, Isaac Okoro is one person I know you love him. And the other day, Bickerstaff is starting to give players a Junkyard Dog Award. Game by game. And I believe he got one of the first ones because of the way he plays. And it's not always about, you know, putting the ball in the hoop. It's about doing everything that the coaching staff is asking of you. It's challenging shots. It's battling through screens. It's making the extra rotation. And he's giving that award to someone every single game. And that kind of shows you like the culture that he's putting in place, is that it's about hard work. It's about, you know, doing what's asked of you. It's about just competing harder than the other team that you're up against. And in a lot of nights, you know, that is going to take you pretty far. And the Cavaliers, that they've done that. They've been one of the hardest working teams in the NBA. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, players that they brought in, Rajon Rondo. It was kind of cool a few weeks ago. Darius Garland was telling a story of Rondo bringing him back to the back of the bus, and they just went through film together. It's like little things like that that really make a team more cohesive, and that you want to battle together and win together. And with them now, I wonder how a team like the Nets, for instance, how they could pose challenges to them. And we'll get to the Nets in a little bit, but teams that have a really elite guard play, because that's where you look at, you know, you have a big player versus a smaller player. How is that kind of balance each other out? That would be a team that I'm curious how they go up against with, you know, a Kyrie and a Seth Curry, even to some degree, like players that can get to the rim, that can hit shots, and you're going to get your big guys, like they got to get really mobile and they're good at that. But then what about when you face a team that is like exceptional at it? That could be a position where they get a little bit reluctant and they get run into some issues, but in the end, it's been very, very good so far this season. And if they were healthy, like truly healthy, like Caris LeVert's another player that they're missing right now. He's a great defensive player. He's going to be one of their, you know, top isolation players, I would imagine, because of his ability to score from different levels of the court and different spots. So yeah, very fun team.
I'm interested to see what happens with Caris, just offensively, because he has a, especially, you know, watching him in Indiana, not that he's a bad offensive player by any means. He's a very good offensive player when he has it going. But
yeah,
I've been encouraged by some of his play in Cleveland. I think he's been a little bit better moving the ball in the way that he is doing it, because he's a good pick and roll creator, but he can kind of grenade passes sometimes where it's not like a super proactive pass. Like sometimes it can just be like, you know, quick drop offs after his scoring opportunity or scoring window diminishes. You know, can he really factor in more as a playmaker? He's not a good catch and shoot 3-point shooter. Like he never has been in his career. I think he has one year at league average shooting at, from deep as a catch and shoot player. Like mostly it's off the dribble or bust, which just kind of runs counter to a lot of what the Cavs need. But I mean, just factoring in like, okay, it was him or Brandon Goodwin. So I think that his level of play and the way that he's able to build chemistry with those guys is what is going to change up that kind of their window this year. In my opinion, it's just going to, you know, I'm probably not assigning him defensively, but he can, again, he's better than Brandon Goodwin. So we'll see how it is. But yeah. I'm curious to see what they look like.
Should be a fun one for them. At least at the very least, I mean, they're a much better team. I was looking at like their year by year defensive stats and past like 4 or 5 years, teams are shooting like 49% against them, like 49, 48, 49, and this year, 44. So
yeah, weren't they were the worst defensive team of all time, like 2 or 3 years ago, or it was right around there, because I think the Wizards took it from them that year. But yeah, the turnaround has been awesome to watch. And Evan Mobley is just like, goddamn, he's so good. I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep swearing. It's okay.
He's a person you would swear about how good he is. You can dish about Evan Mobley for a second if you'd like, no problem.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he has an outside shot at Defensive Player of the Year. I don't think he's going to get it, but he'd be on my short list, and especially with Draymond missing time, I think it's possible, man. And the way things have gone in Utah, I'm not sure that I – like, I'm sure Rudy Gobert would still be on my ballot, but just for fun, like, I do think that Evan has a he would be on the ballot for me right now.
Yeah. And just Jared Allen, he just keeps on finding ways to improve himself. Obviously, it's a little bit easier at his height and his athletic ability. But, I mean, you talk about being stars in your roles and players that just excel at the small things. He is that guy. And just the amount of the rim protection, the offensive rebounding, he's so good at it. And, yeah, just pick and roll defense, pick and roll offense, roll into the basket. He's a tough one to really manage. And I'm happy he got to the All-Star game. I think players kind of – they tend to get a little bit flashy at the All-Star weekend, and he decided to go a different route. He went as Uncle Phil, comfortable man, shout out Fresh Prince. He decided to go that route and he got some flack for it, but hey man, do you, right? If you're comfortable and a vest and got your Blackberry, whatever the hell he owns, it's okay. Just keep on doing you, right? It's got you this far, so no problem. Where are we off to now? Let's talk Philly because, well, yeah, they had the trade that kind of shook the NBA a little bit. And it seems like James Harden is really happy in Philly. It's like one of those rumors that just wouldn't go away is that James Harden is going to Philly. Just kept on hearing it nonstop. KD's like, no, we're good. James Harden's like, I'm happy in Brooklyn. And then here we are, where we got that legendary piece from, I believe it was Ramona Sherborne, or was it Brian Windhorst, whoever it was. And we got some details about, Jake Fisher. That's who it was. Who had the piece that kind of revealed some of the unrest that was going on in the Nets locker room, and how Harden wasn't really happy with his role and how he wanted more. He wanted to run a certain kind of style that was more similar to his Houston days, and Brooklyn's like, we're not going to do that. But here he is in Philly. He's doing that. He's definitely, you know, one of the primary ball handlers. And he loves that idea of, you know, having a big, like, you know, back then it was Clint Capella, but now he has a Joel Embiid, who is a major upgrade. And you got shooters kind of all around them. What were your thoughts so far on the two-game sample size of that pick and roll combination?
Well, I like what you said about shooters all around them, because I think that's been a trope this year that Philly doesn't have shooters or something like that. It's been a lot more about playmaking to me. Like, they just don't have a lot of playmaking, even when, you know, they were all together and healthy. Like, obviously Ben was out and that's part of it, but this is one of the better shooting rosters I think that they've had in Philadelphia. Like, George Niang off the bench, like, it's such a small thing to lead off with, but like, George Niang is the kind of player that they have missed the last couple of years. Like, just having somebody who can come off the bench, not get absolutely killed on defense, move the ball and hit his threes off, you know, at a high level. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been huge for them. You're seeing that more. Like, just I feel like they're going to, I can't remember the number of threes. They took like 40 in the first game. It was close. There was like half their shots were from three. It's not going to be that drastic moving forward, but like, you could see how much they were just getting to the rim, getting to the paint, and getting the ball swinging, getting open shots because of the gravity that they had drawing everything in. Like, the pick and roll game looks really good. That got way overblown at the beginning. You know, when everyone's like, oh, how are they going to play together? I'm like, dude, you're adding a top, if you're being liberal, you're adding a top 15 player to a guy who's in the top three for MVP right now. Like, they'll figure it out. Regardless, it's better than, okay, you're playing James Harden over like Seth Curry. Like, I love Seth Curry. I think he's been really good, and they're going to miss him in some ways, but like, I'm encouraged, man. They looked so good in that game. I didn't want to get too excited about the Wolves game just because the Wolves defense has really fallen off, and they play a brand of defense that's like perfect for showcasing somebody who can pick apart tutor the ball like James Harden can. So it looked great in that game. Against the Knicks yesterday, like, even better. So nice. And I think it's more just with Joel. Like, yes, he's slower rolling to the rim. He's not really a lob threat, or like, he can be, but that's not his thing. Like, he's an elite mid-range shooter. He's an elite shooter from anywhere. It just adds more variation to what they can do. And even if he does catch the ball and he's rolling to the rim, okay, well, you're going to foul him. Like, and I'm tired of like everybody like freaks out and calls them foul merchants. Like, yes, there's certainly grift to their game, but also, okay, if Joel Embiid is rolling to the rim, what else are you going to do? Like, okay, or you can just yell at your guy and say, don't foul him. But like, what is Jericho Sims yesterday was in hell. Like, I actually thought he played some decent minutes, but I mean, it's Joel Embiid, man. Like, he's been that good this year. And just like, you don't have guys who are 7'1", 7'2", who can take you off the bounce from 25 feet or post up from 16 and face up and just do everything that he can. Like, it's just, why do you think he gets fouled this much? It's not just because the refs want to give him a good whistle. Like, yes, there is certainly a foul baiting portion of the game that factors in for him, but like, he's just good. He's so good. I don't want to overreact to two games, but they look like they have it out. Like, if Miami falls off at all and Philly just like really powers ahead, I would not be shocked if they end up taking the one seed. Cause they look good. They look so good. And defensively too, like, it's not like Harden's amazing defensively, but he's at least been pretty engaged off ball, like a lot better than he looked at all in Brooklyn. Yeah. And it just, I'm really encouraged by them.
Conserving his energy for the stretch drive.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly what he was doing. I love that pick and roll between those two. I mean, like you said, it's odd to think that, you know, why wouldn't two players who are exceptionally good, who can score from virtually anywhere on the court, why wouldn't they be good in a pick and roll situation when one of them is 7 feet taller, 7'2" or whatever it was. Against the Knicks, they're running a lot of that Chicago action where it was, you know, Joel Embiid rolling to the basket. You had Tobias Harris flaring out. And I mean, what are you going to do in that situation? Like, Tobias Harris, he's become more of a spot up shooter since Harden got there. I mean, it's only a 2-game sample size, but he's not having the ball in his hands as nearly as much because it's in James Harden's hand. And I mean, that's just a better spot for it to be. But in a situation like that, Embiid's going to the basket. You got James Harden, who can score anywhere on the court. He's a terrific pick and roll player. Then you have Tobias Harris, who is going to be flaring into the 3-point line, pretty good 3-point shooter. Like, what are your options? And the option is that you're pretty much dead. that's kind of what it is. There really isn't a defense that's going to scheme for it. And if it comes down to, okay, you're going to clog the paint or something, well, guess what? There's two other shooters out there somewhere that James Harden's going to find. Over the first two games, 59 free throws. You alluded to free throws. 59 free throws in the first two games with those two. That ranks seventh in the NBA. We're not talking the 76ers. We're talking James Harden and Joel Embiid. 59 free throws over the first two games, and that ranks seventh in the NBA. They're pushing the ball a little bit more, it seems like. 20.5 fast break points per game. On the season, they average 12.7. So they're pushing the ball a lot more, and that's going to make room for Tyrese Maxey, one player who has seen his offense exponentially increase since James Harden got there. A lot more fast break opportunities, a lot more space for him to operate. And when you give him space, I mean, maybe not so much in the, what was it, the clutch challenge with Scotty Barnes, things didn't go as well, but usually when you give him some space, he's going to be able to make some really good things happen for the offense. They got Paul Millsap too, person who wanted some more playing time, and it wasn't really working out in Brooklyn, but with 76ers, he's got a role, you know, 14, 15 minutes. You could see him being probably the pick and roll option for James if they want to, you know, go to a more of an all bench lineup with like Danny Green and just, you know, go Korkmaz, you know, just go down the line. You have shooters around there. You got Paul Millsap. You can kind of roll. He's got a bit of a pop out game to him. And so you're opening up more options for consistent scoring quarter by quarter. And defensively, I mean, your thoughts on Matisse Thybulle, because I like that he's able to be a bigger part of their team now that they have a point guard who can shoot.
Yeah, no, it really helps, because making him the only non-shooter on the floor, like even just in the game yesterday and against the Wolves, I think we saw him being used as a screener a lot more, which I like, because, overall, I felt like that offense just had a lot more flow to it. Like, yeah, part of it might be having more time to game plan. I don't know, but I was encouraged by it, because if you can use him as a screen more, you can maybe do some more stuff, getting him going towards the rim. And he's honestly like a decent passer. Like, as long as he doesn't have to put the ball on the floor, he's a good passer. Like, I think as a standstill guy, he's fine. Maybe if he has, you know, catch the ball in one move, he's good. But defensively, like, he's getting a bigger, like, I don't want to say bigger role. He was still playing a lot pre-trade, but I think he's going to be tasked with doing a little bit more on the perimeter defensively. Like, they're going to need more from him, I should say. A lot's going to depend on, like, okay, can he do enough to fill in the cracks offensively? And I think he will be able to, but he's a really interesting part for them, especially when it comes to the playoffs, because if they are having trouble with the perimeter option, like, he's going to be the guy they have to go to. Like, they have a lot of like forwards who can slot in and play the 3-4, but really, I mean, Matisse is probably the only guy I want guarding, but like, you know, the best wing scorer on the other team. Like, who, okay, I mean, like, Danny Green can play up and play on some, but he hasn't been that guy this year. He's really struggled with injury. He's been very slow. He's not there. I mean, so Matisse, a lot is kind of riding on his shoulders, and I don't want to like overcomplicate things, but like, he's really important for them in what they, them hitting their highest outcomes, I should say.
Definitely. And that's why I find him so intriguing, is that he's finally able to get more playing time, because with Ben, they just wasn't there. You couldn't have two guys who couldn't shoot the ball on the court together. It just doesn't really work. There's no spacing. It's going to obviously go south for you at some point, but now with this, and I do see him, he's shooting a bit more threes like over the past little while, and his shot doesn't look that bad. I mean, it's just my opinion, but it doesn't look too bad. And if he's able to, you know, over the past next few weeks, you know, work on that shot, get some stability there, then that's going to open up the court even more. And, you know, where he goes down the stretch of games, when teams are going to be game planning, wanting to give him a shot more so than James Harden and Joel Embiid, where does he go on the court? Is it the dunker spot? Is it corner three? How does he perform in those situations? Is he going to be a liability? Are there some offense, defense, lineup substitutions? Who knows? Like, those are all options when it comes down to the stretch of a game, but he's got some potential for sure to be a huge factor for them. Just because defensively, if you can take pressure off Joel Embiid and James Harden on that end of the court, they're going to be that much better on offense. And that is where you're going to win your games. Any other thoughts on the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that looks like they could actually win themselves a championship if things go according to plan?
No, I think that's all I got on them right now.
Milwaukee Bucks. That's another team that been up and down this season. They haven't had Brooke Lopez virtually all year, and they really missed his rim protection. It's put a lot more pressure on Giannis. Bobby Portis is a player that's been tasked with being more of a rim protector and kind of a do-it-all big man. That's had up and down results, but I'm sure they're looking to kind of start cooking as they head down the stretch of the season. Where do you think they are in their season? And I guess what weaknesses do you see for them at the moment?
Their defense for me right now has been pretty underwhelming. They're 24th in defense in February. And that's kind of been a slide that's been going on in just in 2022 in general. I mean, as they've dealt with, like, I don't want to be unfair. Injuries have definitely played a part, but they've really missed Brooke, like you're mentioning. I think, and some people will point to Giannis. I still think Giannis has like a good case for defensive player of the year. He's been that good.
Yeah,
he's had to play the five more. He's playing way more in drop than he ever has. And he's looked good doing it, but the issue has been they're not as good at stopping the ball. I think they have in some ways really missed PJ Tucker more than I expected. Everyone who they thought could maybe come in and be like a facsimile of PJ Tucker has not worked out for them. And it's been rough. Like they, especially with how much they've had to play Bobby Portis, like he's not a guy you can just traditionally drop down because he's very below the rim. He's not really a shot blocker. He's not somebody who's going to bother shots all that much. He is active and can kind of play closer to the level on the perimeter, but I mean, it just makes it a little bit harder for what they're trying to do. Like their defense just falling apart. And especially too, like they've been very automatic in how they send two to the ball too. And I really don't like it. It's part of it. I get it. Like in terms of, you know, like with Dante being in and out before they traded him.
Yeah.
Pat Connaughton is more of an off ball defender than an on ball defender. Like you can't, I mean, Drew can't just defend everything for you. Like, and he's been very good defensively this year, but it's just hard. Like, I don't know how to completely pinpoint everything, but like not having Giannis roaming and able to really muck things up off the ball has just kind of taken a lot of potency out of their defense, in my opinion. Like he's still been very, very good at what he's doing and one of the top defensive players in the league, but not having someone who can just be solid. And I mean, that's underselling Brooke Lopez. Like Brooke is a very good defender, but not having that size and that ability to have Giannis be Giannis off the ball has just really damaged their defense, in my opinion. Part of it too, like their rotations, everything have not been good. Like the couple games they played before the All-Star break were pretty lackluster. I mean, I don't want to undersell them because when they have Drew and Chris and Giannis all together, they're still really good. And when they're all on the court, they're really good. Their rotation will tighten up in the playoffs. But even then, like, it's been pretty pretty discouraging to see how their defense has played. Again, like, Giannis just taking another step. Like, just in February, 33 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists. Like 61, 42, 74 splits. Like he's gotten more comfortable as a pull-up guy from mid-range. And it sounds minor to shoot. I think he's shooting like 37 or 38% on 4 or 5 a game on pull-up twos. And it sounds minor, but that is good enough. And with volume and non-hesitation, that defenses have to guard him out there. They can't just give him a runway, which you don't want to either way. But like the pacing he's added in the half court for a player his size to handle like that is just nuts. Like, it is kind of insane. And he becomes even closer to breaking basketball every game, it feels like. But just like in spite of it, like the Bucks just are kind of average right now, or have been for a little bit. But I still believe in them as a real contender, but I have more questions as the season goes on, for sure.
Yeah, there's no word on Brooke either. Like, they're not even saying anything, which is kind of scary. And with the Victor Oladipo, we talked about, you know, you're going to miss so much time. What kind of player are you going to be? Even like Alonzo Ball, right? What kind of player are you going to be when you return? Because naturally, you're going to need some time to get acclimated to NBA game speed, just your body getting healthy, getting ready for like NBA minutes. It's not the same as any kind of practice. And so granted, you know, Brooke, he's not going to be asked to, you know, play 30 minutes. Like, it's going to be a little bit matchup based. We saw against the Suns last year where, you know, he became actually a bit of a liability because of how the Suns were exposing him. And they're going to get to those times in the playoffs. But there will be times where they need a rim protector, and they brought in Serge Ibaka. And I wonder if they're thinking that, hey, can he do something similar to Brook? Maybe not the same level, but could he at least let Giannis go back to being more of a roamer? Because now that Giannis is your rim protector, there's no other roamer. And that is a big part of their defense, right? His just ability to impose his will and to be just a distraction and be physical off the ball and to, you know, grab those offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, muck up driving lanes. He was the person who did that because he's so freaking long. So they don't have a person doing that. It's not going to be Chris Middleton, and Pat Connaughton supposed to be back at some point. Who knows when, but he's another serviceable player off the bench that was solid for them in the playoff run last year. They're bringing in Tyreke Evans for a tryout of some sort. I guess they're looking to get a little bit more playmaking ability on the perimeter. And, you know, they probably could use some of that with Drew Holiday. You know, he's been good this year, but having more playmaking is never a bad thing. And I'm curious how things go. Obviously, like you said, it's a lot about their defense and if they're able to return to that level that they once had. And we're not sure if they're going to be able to do that because Brook Lopez, they don't have a replacement for him. They tried Greg Monroe. That didn't really work out. And that's kind of where they're at. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm hopeful with Serge. I haven't watched the Bucks after the All-Star break yet. I need to catch up on the Brooklyn game, but like they've been trying to play him and drop, but they were also playing him and Portis together. It's been funky, man. Like part of it, again, I don't want to be unfair. Injuries have played a part, but I definitely a team I need to follow very closely as the season winds down because I don't have a great feel on where they're at right now.
No, we're looking at the other teams in the NBA or in the Eastern Conference, Miami, Brooklyn, and we're going to talk about in a second, Philly, teams that are kind of finding their stride. And then you have the Milwaukee Bucks who are kind of limping throughout this season to some degree. And it's kind of a bit of a championship hangover. I'm sure that is part of it. It's very natural. But now they got to find their new groove and they got to find their defensive capabilities. Wrapping this up now with the Brooklyn Nets, the other team in that James Harden trade. And I'm curious how you feel Ben Simmons is going to fit. We haven't seen him yet. Mentally, it seems like he's in a pretty good spot. And we're not really sure when he's going to be coming back. We were all kind of curious, like, why isn't he playing? He's been resting for so long. Why isn't he on the court? Then we learned that he's having some back issues. Oh, okay. Which has kind of put his play in that Philly game in a few weeks. I believe it's next week in question. So he may not be back for that, but in the end, we kind of know what Ben Simmons is, and I guess he is working on his jumper. There's been some footage seen of him working with Kyle Korver on his jumper. Pretty good start. But if we're looking at what Ben Simmons was when he was playing with Philly last season, how do you think he fits best with Brooklyn?
Good question. Not as a small ball five. I always hear that, and like Ben has never been good at the five. Like maybe it'll happen. Who knows? But like to this point, I just don't think there's anything to go off with that. Like ideally, he's operating as a four who's going to press on the break, get them going in early offense and really sell out to be awesome for them defensively. But then again, you have some of the same issues in the half court. Okay. How does this look with him in the half court? How are you, is he just going to be roaming in the dunker spot? Okay. Well, what does that mean if he's on the court with Andre Drummond or if he's playing out there with LaMarcus Aldridge, like the spacing is going to be cramped. Like LaMarcus is good. Like he can play out to three, but for the most part, he likes to slow roll to 18 and he's not popping. I think he's shooting 1-3 games. He's still been like, again, he's been very good this year, but like just in terms of looking at court dimensions and everything, it's wonky. Are you playing with Bruce Brown? Okay. Well, Bruce Brown theoretically is going to be in that same role that Ben is playing in as somebody who is screening and rolling and doing more for you from there. Like that's what I hope Ben will be doing. I'm not entirely sure. Like I don't imagine him getting a ton of the mid post, high post touches that he got in Philadelphia. Like maybe they try and do run, like, I mean, stuff that I'd love to see, like run more snug pick and roll with him or have him just doing more, like using Kyrie and Kevin Durant as screeners for him is really interesting too, in terms of trying to create easier looks and find other ways for him to get downhill. But it's just going to depend, man. Like their roster is so wonky to me. And I've written about this a couple times this year because like it's felt like Steve Nash has tried to find a different iteration of this team every game. Like the lineups, I think they are second. Last time I checked, they were second in the NBA in starting lineups tried. And I don't think that's really changed up much. Like they've obviously, I mean, they have Seth and Andre Drummond in the starting lineup now, and they've looked good. And I think that part of the reason I like that trade for them is getting those two guys added some stability to their lineups. You have two guys, you know, are capable rotation players. But I just wonder what they're getting from the rest of everybody. Like Kessler Edwards minutes have been demoted a little bit since the trade. I don't like that because I think he's their only real defender who can shoot, move off the ball and pass. Well, also like, again, not getting killed on defense. And that's a problem. Like they have a lot of useful players, but guys who can be used together is where you start scratching your head a little bit. I mean, Kevin Durant is amazing. He's been an MVP caliber player. Kyrie's looked really good when he's healthy. It looks like he's going to get to play every game now, regardless of how I feel about that or what anybody else feels about it. That's where we're headed towards. I mean, Joe Harris, potentially, I don't know what's up with that. Like he's potentially getting a second surgery. I don't know if he did get the second surgery. Regardless, that pushed his time frame out. I just have so many questions about this team, even when they are healthy. Like again, like the bench question is very big. Like, what does he look like in the half court? They're still a contender, but to me, like even compared to Milwaukee, I have way more questions about this Brooklyn team and what they can actually look like. I didn't mean to like again, I don't mean to be unfair to them, but there's just like I'm kind of just in the I have no idea what to make of them right now. Because we haven't got to see them together yet. It's just weird.
Yeah, definitely. And just on Kyrie Irving, because I wanted to talk about that. There are some new laws being put in place in New York, but it still seems like Kyrie will not be able to play. He will be able to attend games, but he's still...
Okay, yeah. I fudged that. That is my bad.
Yeah, all good. No, it's all good because I think we're all kind of waiting for that news. And this was coming out kind of today, actually, that he won't be able to play still because of it's due to like the city workplace vaccine mandate. So he still can't. And what's funny, and maybe he was anticipating being able to play because he had said a little while ago, I think it was like through IG or something like that. He's like, just watch us in the second half of the season. I was like, bro, you are going to be watching. You're not going to be playing. Like that's where we're at because you're not going to be able to play. You're not getting vaccinated and he can't be on the court. He looked great against the Bucks on the road, but I mean, I would imagine, I think that this is going to probably be okay come playoff time, right? I think, but that also means that, hey, guess what? Ben Simmons, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving haven't played together. Practice, okay, cool, but they haven't played together. And that's one of the biggest questions, like we're talking about, is what is this going to look like? Because you have, you know, a player like Ben who can do some things, not all things. He does some things really, really well as a playmaker. You know, you're talking short roles, being a screener, that probably is one of the best ways to use Ben. And, you know, he's chilling out in the dunker spot. Cool. Push the ball down the court. That is a great way to use Ben Simmons. But now you have some centers who can't really hit threes. The spacing is going to be very, very wonky. Kevin Durant and Kyrie can fix a lot of things, but when they're not going to have time to actually play together, that's where I have a lot of questions about what they're going to look like. I mean, and also, they don't have a lot of forward depth either. I mean, I think they've kind of traded a lot of those players away, or they aren't really bringing them around. But I mean, they got like a Blake Griffin, they got Andre Drummond, they got LaMarcus Aldridge. Great. You got Goran Dragic, you got Patty Mills, you got Kyrie Irving. Cool. But like outside of that, what do you have? Like you're really relying a lot on Bruce Brown. And I'm not sure if that's a recipe for success. Maybe it is. Maybe he has an unbelievable year and things look really, really well, good for them. But I just don't see a lot of depth there. And James Johnson has been up and down. That's another name that we could kind of throw out there. But there's definitely a deficiency in the middle part of the court to some degree. And I guess they're hoping that, you know, Kevin Durant, he's not opposed to playing 58 minutes a game. He showed us that last season. And Steve Nash is not opposed to throwing him out there 58 minutes in a game. Maybe that's what we're kind of heading towards. But yeah, a lot of questions there. And I just don't see how they're going to be able to address it because they're not going to be together, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Any other closing thoughts on the Eastern Conference? You want to talk a little Hornets, Hawks, anything that pops out to you for those teams? Because they're obviously looking to get in that top six as well.
I don't believe in them as top six teams. So I will push off on them. I will say Boston, I believe in Boston.
Oh, geez, you forgot about Boston. My bad.
No, you're good.
I skipped them.
I think it's fair after getting canned by the Pacers by 21 last night. It's almost fair to skip them.
I bet you loved that, didn't you?
No, not really. I mean, it is what it is. I'll take it. A win's a win.
Yeah.
I mean, this team, like they've it's hard to talk about them after watching last night. Like, their defense, they've had the best defense in 2022 by a wide margin. That did not happen or fall through last night. I think they were coming in off a back-to-back, though, just to be fair.
Sure.
But, like, Jason Tatum has been incredibly good. Jaylen Brown's been really good. Marcus Smart is playing the best basketball of his career as a playmaker, an actual lead ball handler. That's really organizing things for them in the half court, and that's been huge for them. Robert Williams has been really good defensively. Like, Al Horford is getting up there. He's kind of fallen off a little bit. He's still been good, but, like, he hasn't been – like, I thought he was very good at the beginning of the season, and he's looked a little bit worse for wear recently. But Derek White was such a big add for them. I've loved his what he's done for them. Like, you can check his box score. Doesn't look great, but just as somebody who helps connect things and keeps the ball moving and really helps the offense flow, I think he's been huge. And obviously defensively, like, I think he'd make an all-defense team for me this year. So, I'm not ready to put them in their dead set contender, but they have an outside shot at making the conference finals. They've been that good this year. The last two times that they had a top 10 defense, they made the conference finals. So they're on track to do it again. Who knows? And I think this is the best offense they've had in that span too. And again, not the offense is great, but they still have questions there. But I buy Boston for sure if they're able to keep playing with they have defensively.
Leave it to a Raptor fan to forget about the Boston Celtics. That's what kind of happened there. I fully agree. Like, they when it comes to best opponent field goal percentage inside 5 feet to the basket, like, they're the best in the NBA. So they've clearly made a real concerted effort to protect the paint, and they got the players for it. Like, you got Time Lord, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart. They should be a good defensive team, you would think, right? And kind of working through what we're going to be going forward. Derek White, like you said, was a great pickup. They've kind of mastered the art of having like four guys. I got like four plus assists because they have so many playmakers. And, you know, to the credit of Jaylen Brown and Tatum, they've been criticized earlier on this season for, you know, kind of being chuckers a little bit. Granted, they're exceptional offensive players, but, you know, it's a team game. Again, a cliche, but they had to spread the ball around a little bit. And, a person like Peyton Pritchard, another person that can come in and just hit threes. He's getting some playing time recently. We'll see how long that lasts for. But in the end, Grant Williams, these are guys that are coming in and they're able to hit shots when they're being asked to do it. And they got a really nice flow with their lineup. It seems like they got a lot of size. They got some point guard depth to some degree because a few different players are handling the ball. They brought in Daniel Tice again. Serviceable big man who's going to not make mistakes as much. That's a good team. And I believe 538 actually had them to win the Eastern Conference heading into the All-Star break. They were very high on them and because of, you know, the streak that they've played. So they've been very good and they got the shot makers. So they're going to be a tough out for anyone. How it, you know, translates to the playoffs. It's a lot of this is going to kind of fall on Al Horford to some degree, because I think they need him to continue that play or find that level of play that he had earlier on the season. And, you know, maybe just needs a little bit of rest. He's an old man. He had some rest last season. Sam Presti helped him out, had him on the OKC bench for quite some time, not even on the bench. He was just chilling out. He wasn't even with the team. So I'm sure that kind of helped the longevity of his career a little bit, but they need him to find that level again. And that could be a huge factor in their success this season, assuming that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are able to continue to be, you know, the 20 point per game players, and Robert Williams continues to do what he's doing as a shot blocker and rim protector. Another fun team. That's why we're talking about this Eastern Conference, man, is that there are a lot of good teams. And I'm not sure, quite possible that we get our champion from the East this year, once again, because of the depth of the conference. But whoever does make it to the finals, they're going to be battle-tested, probably tired. That's another part, too. We'll see how
they will definitely be tired. Like, I can't wait for the Eastern Conference playoffs, man. Like, I mean, both sides, obviously. But the East playoffs are going to be just a total wasteland. Like, I have like we went through all this. I have no idea how it's gonna play out. Like, I mean I'll have to look into it and really like crunch numbers more and look back at some past games between the top teams, but especially with how much has changed up to since the deadline, I'm very excited to see how things play out. It's gonna be fun playoffs.
Yeah, and it might just come down to, you know, matchups. Like, if Philly plays Brooklyn, for instance, and that's not a good matchup, not saying it is, but that's just an example. Or if Miami plays Boston. Again, maybe the system matchup doesn't really go well for them because these teams have so much depth when it comes to star power, and they all have like their little deficiencies here and there, but overall they're quality teams. So we'll have to see who comes out of the East. Any work coming up, Mark, for you? Anything that people can look out for?
Yeah, I should have a lot coming out this week. I know like I have like three or four deadlines that are all coming up. So expect that. I have all my stuff up on Twitter. I'm pretty active there. So yeah, Beautiful. Thanks so much for having me on, man. This was fun.
Nice. I appreciate you coming on and giving me your time. I said be an hour, and look at that, we're over an hour. So you can find him at M. Schindler NBA. Again, his work on Basketball News and SB Nation, look out for it. And obviously he's a great podcaster too. So Mark, thanks so much. And everyone, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.